This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
This week, the Clarets are back in league action after the international break and they commence their seemingly relentless, never-ending charge to the Premier League. This is the None and Ever podcast. Hello and welcome to another episode of The Preview Show, brought to you by the Known and Never podcast. I'm your host, Natalie Bromley, and joining me this week are panellist Richard Steele and our resident statistician, Dave Statman-Roberts, who's going to be joining us from the Preview Show studio to give us all of your stats, hints, tips and everything you need to know ahead of this weekend's EFL fixture. Rich, let's dive straight in here because we've got a few things to cover before we get into the nitty-gritty. Enforced break with the internationals. The last time we saw the Clarets in action, it was a very unhappy trip to the Etihad once again. I guess I'm going to start with you by just saying, like, how are you feeling now as we start this final push towards the end of the season, final 9 games, no more breaks, and surely a title and promotion to celebrate soon? What's your current state of mind?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm good. yeah, it's great, isn't it? I'm probably feeling a little bit better than you anyway, Natalie, at the moment. So, yeah. but, yeah, no, it's, do you know what? It's actually a funny one, isn't it? It's so nice watching us at the moment. Like you said, we got 9-10 games left. I've lost track a little bit now.
I think it's 9. I'm pretty sure it's 9. Yeah.
And, you know, we're going to go up. We know we're going to win the league. You know, so it's a nice place to be in. We've got players coming back from injury. But at the same time, something that we all love about football is having that little bit of an edge, isn't it? And that little bit of nerves and tension is... as difficult as the relegation battle was and stressful, like you kind of almost buzzing to go to games where it's kind of like, kind of get that relaxed feeling now, which is a nice feeling in some ways. Unfortunately, I couldn't go to the Hull away game, just night games up north for me because I'm kind of working in Cheshire at the moment a bit too much. So I was kind of just like lying down on the couch watching it. And if you ask anyone who watches Burnley games with me, they know I'm normally on the edge of the seat.
pacing
up and down the living room. But yeah, I'm looking forward to tomorrow's game. There'll be a lot of people who won't be happy it's on a Friday night, but I'm buzzing because I'm going to Madrid on Saturday. So it's worked really well, the sky fixture change. And then I think the Easter weekend will be an exciting one, looking ahead to Sheffield United. Definitely two games, which will get me off the edge of the seat. And you kind of think, you know, you're 2 games away from promotion, aren't you? So I'm just kind of, I'm going to Middlesbrough away and I'm kind of keeping my fingers and toes crossed that we do it. From a selfish reason, we'll do it from that point of view. But I think at the very worst, I think we'll seal promotion against Sheffield United on the Easter Monday. But yeah, exciting times. And yeah, just looking forward to going back on the turf, really.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. I'm glad you mentioned that about the slight lack of edge. It's such a complex game, is football, being a football fan, and it's a really complex set of emotions. I think you know, when it's really bad, it's just not enjoyable. When it's really good, you're like, well, this is easy. And I think you want that ideal balance, don't you, of so I liked it when it was maybe like a month to 7 days ago, where it looked like we were going to go up and we were probably going to get the title, but there were still so many games left and the gap wasn't quite as ridiculous as it is now. You just, there's that edge to it, isn't there? And there's that thing that just gets you going at the end of the day. I don't want to dwell on the game too much because we all knew what it was, but was there anything from the City game, Rich, that you think needs addressing this season? Do you write off the whole game as, well, it's just City and it's ridiculous and that's not the benchmark that we need to be trying to get to? Or do you just think, actually, you know, we can use X, Y and Z to drive us forward as a team?
Yeah, I think it's, listen, I thought the first half an hour we played really well. Mm. I thought, you know, leading up to the goal, we were starting to have a lot of momentum. Obviously, Teller had a couple of chances and was playing nice football. And just a reminder of how good some of these top players are. You know, obviously, they've got Haaland, who at the moment, before that game, he got 5 against Leipzig. And I think that shows the level City are at, is that they beat RB Leipzig 7-0, who are a very good side. I actually watched the second half that City played Leipzig in the home, when Leipzig was at home, and Leipzig won the second half 1-0 and got a 1-1 draw. And it just shows when they're on it, they can really rip teams apart. And yeah, it is what it is. You know, I was slightly disappointed with rest of a few players. I thought going into the National Bay, why not play your full strength team? Why not play Muric, for an example for me? Why not play Barnes, who could have maybe held the ball up a little bit better? But, you know, we've kind of talked a lot, haven't we, about loan players, sign them all up and whatever. And I think it's just, even though our level isn't City, of course, it's not, just a reminder of, yeah, because you've done really well in the Championship doesn't necessarily guarantee that you're going to absolutely smash it in the Prem.
Right. But you'd expect us to be competing, just, wouldn't you, against, yeah.
I think with this current team we've got now, I think we stay in the Prem anyway.
Yeah, me too.
But it's still a reminder that we probably need 6 or 7 players. For me, going from that game, I think we need a little bit more physicality, especially in midfield areas.
Yeah.
But you listen, it's one of them. Enjoyed it. Enjoyed the game. I was actually in the Leeds for my 30th, so I was watching. Couldn't go, so I was watching it with a chippy tea. It was good. My mate, because we had some cookies, my mate said every time we scored a goal in the second half, I kept eating a cookie, which was subconscious. I didn't even realise. which has been nice after having a,
I was gonna say the wheels are off now, aren't they, after your
it was just that weekend. But yeah, it's a real difficult one, isn't it, you know? And yeah, I thought there was a, if I'm being honest, there was a lot of very rational responses on Twitter about the game and the situation.
Irrational, maybe that's
the people I follow. I don't know.
I saw a lot as well.
Yeah, and an understanding and an expectation of where we are. But I think company's not daft. He knows where we'll need to recruit. He'll know how many we need to recruit. And listen, get this embargo out of the way, which I'm sure we will do. And then we can, you know, really start looking ahead and planning for the summer. And I think that's a great thing, isn't it, now? Because promotion's sealed. We'll already have targets lined up. We'll already agents and all, you know, we'll already be kind of looking at the market we can go in and where we can spend and everything. So, yeah, it's just exciting times moving on from that game for the rest of the season. And kind of, yeah. I'm actually really looking forward to the transfer window this summer to see who we're going to be linked with, the calibre of players. And hopefully we'll be linked with more Maxwell Cornet calibre of players rather than Dale Stephen calibre of players this summer.
Yeah, Dale Stevens, who retired this week.
Good luck to him.
Well, we've had a couple of boosters, haven't we, about that. We're hearing reports that Matson's due to sign on. I think Chelsea is struggling from a finance perspective. And I think there's probably a recognition from Matson as well that he's hardly going to be pushing for the first team if he goes back to Chelsea anyway. So I guess that's a possible booster. I mean, out of the four key loan players, Rich, so you've got Harwood, Bellis, Matson, Bayer and Teller. They're the four key loan signings. Where I've gone from thinking we might get one out of four to genuinely looking at this and thinking we could genuinely get all four of them permanently.
I don't think we get Howard Bellis permanently. I'd be very surprised. I think he's someone who City see as playing for them in the future. I seen reports that he's looking at signing a new contract at City, and whether we get, you know, we could possibly get him back on loan, which would be great. Yeah. Mattson's making a lot of noise in the press that he'd be happy to come back to Burnley, and same as Jordan Bayer. I think Bayer's seems to me practically a done deal. Gladbach's chairman, you don't have a clue what's going on at Chelsea, if I'm being honest. So
Chelsea don't have a clue what's going on at Chelsea.
No, and obviously they've obviously signed a lot of players, and there's going to be financial fair play possible implications. Even though I think that's a kind of a system that's flawed. Obviously, lastly, Teller. I've always kind of sat on the fence with Teller a little bit. I think if you play, this is my opinion on Teller. If you play Teller as a number 10, he's someone who I think's got a massive potential. And I think even at Premier League level, his pace running in behind and he's a great finisher will really help. But for me, he's not a Premier League level winger. So I think it depends where a company sees him playing. And what Southampton are going to do. If Southampton stay up or go down, they're going to want to keep him in a way, or they're going to demand a decent transfer fee. So
I'm not worried about Southampton's future, Rich, to be honest. I think he's likely to come to Burnley, whether Southampton stay up or not, to be honest.
Yeah. So, but going back to whether his availability becomes easier, for me, I think if you play him in that number 10, I think the development he's had in that position and will continue to have, even though I think he's like 22, 23, because of injuries, he's not actually played a lot of football.
No.
And like I said, you know, when he does play in that position, he's electric, and maybe a couple of injuries to Benson, or you know, well, maybe an injury to Benson has allowed him to come inside a little bit more, and I think he's really flourished in that position.
Good, excellent. Yeah, well, let's see what the transfer window means for us. We do have the second fan advisory board meeting, I think, towards the end of April. And as listeners who follow our social medias will know, we've got three None and Ever team members on that panel, myself, George, representing the Trust, and Charlotte. Without doubt, the first thing that we will be discussing is what on earth has happened with these accounts and why, you know, is it simply a case that a change in auditor and there's been a professional mess up? And it is going to get ironed out, but obviously we'll report back on that. I haven't seen anything yet that concerns me other than a procedural mistake that will get rectified. And actually, I know it sounds ridiculous, but the speed at which the EFL have been handing out transfer embargoes willy-nilly to everybody, I think there's now four in the top flight, just kind of short. To me, that kind of dampened it a little bit. I was like, oh, okay, the EFL are just throwing some weight around this, which doesn't detract from the seriousness of it, but I don't think it's quite as worrying as what people thought. So we will report back on that after that meeting. In the meantime, let's have a look ahead to this weekend's fixture. Now, before we get into that, we, of course, many moons ago, before we did you our Manchester City preview, we left you with a quiz question. And that question was, prior to the FA Cup quarterfinal against Manchester City, when was the last time that Burnley played an FA Cup tie in the month of March, and which team did we face? Rich, did you know this? I could not figure this out for the love of my...
I presume it would have been Watford, wouldn't it? No, no, I don't know then if it's not that Watford game, the last quarterfinal.
Well, as he tends to do most of the season, Statman Dave decided to throw us a little bit of a red herring. Since the year 2000, Burnley have played five FA Cup ties in March, as well as the quarterfinal against Watford in 2003 and the fifth round replay at Deadwood in 2005. We also played a fifth round tie in Arsenal in March 2009. But sometimes the answer is more obvious than you think, and that's because this season, our fifth round tie against Fleetwood Town was played on the 1st of March. So that is the answer to the question. Sneaky, sneaky, Dave Roberts. Sneaky, sneaky. So yes, well done to anybody who submitted those answers. I don't remember seeing any come through on social medias. We had a lot of Watford guesses, but none for Fleetwood. I think our friend of the show, John Robertson, got it after about four or five attempts. But yeah, it's... Fleetwood was your answer. So if you want to have another crack at another quiz question, all you need to do is hang around until the end of the show and we will give you this week's. So it's Friday night fixture. It's Sunderland at home. It's an 8 o'clock kickoff. We are going to head now to the preview show studio where we're going to hand over to Dave Statman Roberts for this week's championship head-to-head.
Although the vast majority of league matches between Burnley and Sunderland have taken place in the top flight, this is the 10th season we've spent together in the second tier. Curiously, Burnley's home record in second tier matches against Sunderland is historically poor, as will become very clear as we run you through the previous results. Prior to the 1970s, all previous league meetings were in the top flight, and our first season together at this level was in 1971-72. The match at Turf Moor took place in October 1971. Former Burnley manager Alan Brown was in charge of Sunderland, and his side came away with a narrow victory after Colin Waldron failed to convert a first-half penalty for the Clarets, and Dave Watson had headed home from Dennis Stewart's corner with less than 5 minutes remaining for a 1-0 away win. Both teams failed to gain promotion at the end of that season, but the following season, 1972-73, was much more successful for Burnley, including a memorable victory over Sunderland at Turf Moor. However, you'll have to wait for the details, as that's the topic of this week's memory match. Sunderland were the visitors to Turf Moor for three further second-tier league matches later in the 1970s. For the first two of those, former Burnley manager Jimmy Adamson was in charge of the visitors. The match on New Year's Eve 1977 finished goalless, but there was a more eventful meeting in September 1978. The visitors were reduced to 9 men just before half-time following the dismissals of Mick Henderson and Joe Bolton. But Gary Rowell scored twice in the second half as the 9 men of Sunderland took a 2-goal lead. And although Tony Morley pulled one back, we weren't able to make our numerical advantage count. The fifth and final match from the 70s on our list finished 1-1, as Martin Dobson scored an equaliser just after the break, after Brian Pop Robson had given the visitors a first-half lead. There was just one match at this level in the 1990s, and it was another draw. Once again, Burnley had to come from behind after Martin Smith had put the visitors 1-0 up. This time, it was a David Ayres penalty which levelled the scores, and that was the way it stayed. The match in May 2004 was the end of an era at Turf Moor. After 6 seasons at the helm, Burnley decided not to renew the contract of manager Stan Ternent, and the last match of that season was at home to Sunderland. Sadly, the Clarets couldn't muster a win, despite taking the lead through Glenn Little, who was also playing his last match for the club, and the visitors won 2-1 with goals from Gary Breen and Kevin Kyle. Another match which was memorable for the wrong reasons took place the following season in March 2005. Burnley lost 2-0, but the main talking point was the debut of striker Adeyemi Mbaye, who came off the bench but lasted less than 3 minutes before being shown a straight red card for headbutting George McCartney. The final match on our list took place in December 2006. Burnley took a 2-0 lead with a brace from Kyle Lafferty, and it stayed that way until the last 10 minutes when first Grant Leadbitter pulled one back before David Connolly found an equaliser in the second minute of stoppage time. So, that past home record in second-tier home games against Sunderland is as follows. Played 9, won 1 with 4 draws and 4 defeats. Burnley have scored 8 goals in these matches compared with 11 for our visitors.
Okay, Rich, a little bit of silliness, this feature. I can't believe we've still got this fixture. This feature in the fixture. Most famous celebrity fans, Dave, has once
again. I love
again,
this.
I sometimes open the show script with a bit of trepidation, looking at going, what on earth is Dave Shudden here this week? So before we look into Dave's shortlist, did any Sunderland fans immediately spring to mind before you saw what we had on offer?
No, to be honest, I imagine obviously because it's quite a big catchment area and obviously in a city, they've got quite a few well-supported club. But no, we're recording this quite early-ish in the morning. So
yeah,
none really come to mind.
No, not definitely. Like, I can't think of any of that. It is. It's very early morning. It's actually quite amazing, listeners, that Rich and I have got ourselves up and recording this in the. It feels like practically the middle of the night. But yeah, we're not exactly. Let's just say Sunderland famous fans aren't the top of our agenda first thing this morning. Let's have a look then and see what Dave has pulled out. Number one, Steve Cramer, former athlete. Coming in at number two, Paul Collingwood, the cricketer. Rich. Okay, yeah. Should have got that one. Dave Stewart, who's a musician from the Eurythmics, comes in at number three. At number four, legendary news reporter Kate Aday. At number five, Melanie Hill, the actress from Bread and Corrie. Okay. And finally, coming in at number six, Sir Tim Rice, songwriter and author. Tim Rice, I know from musical theatre days. That's actually not a bad list, Rich. It's quite a credible
yeah,
list.
Yeah, of course.
How are you ranking that? I'm probably about that quite high, I think.
Yeah, it's pretty good for me. There's a couple of older ones that I'm not as sure. Obviously, Steve Cram, you know, and Paul Collingwood stand out for me, being a PE teacher. So,
sure.
Especially the Paul Collingwood one, being a massive cricket fan growing up, watched a lot of Collingwood, still part of the England setup now. So, I'm going to give that 7 out of 10, me personally.
I'm going to agree with that. Yeah, Kate Aidy's. I've got a huge lot of respect for as a journalist and as a reporter, so I'm gonna agree with you. I'm gonna moderate that at 7 out of 10. Well done, Sunderland fans. That is very credible score for your celebrity fans. Let's head back over then to the previous show studio and back to Dave Roberts, who is going to give us this week's memory match.
This week's memory match is Burnley's one and only home win against Sunderland in the second tier, and took place towards the end of the very successful 1972-73 season, in which the Clarets went on to become second division champions. Almost 50 years ago, on 16th of April 1973, Sunderland arrived at Turf Moor with Bob Stokoe in charge. The visitors had recently earned a place in that season's FA Cup final, having overcome Arsenal in the semi-final earlier in the month, and knew that they would be playing Leeds United at Wembley the following month. Back to this match, though, and the Clarets took the lead in the 27th minute after Martin Dobson and Billy Ingham combined on the right, and when the ball came across to Paul Fletcher, he turned and lobbed Jim Montgomery for the opener. It stayed that way until a minute before the end, when a powerful shot from Paul Fletcher at the B-hole end beat Jim Montgomery to double the lead and put the result beyond any doubt. The win meant that Burnley's promotion back to the top flight following a two-year absence was confirmed. The Burnley Express headline read, "A day worth waiting for, how the Clarets seal promotion." However, there were still four matches to play, and Burnley needed to keep up the momentum to ensure they went up as champions. They eventually did that with a 1-1 draw against Preston North End at Deepdale. Although victory on Friday won't confirm Burnley's promotion this time, it would be apt if we could choke up another win over Sunderland to take us one step closer to promotion and the title, 50 years on from that memorable season of 1972-73.
And as ever, we like to speak to our opposition fans to get their viewpoint ahead of the game. And this week we spoke to... Who did we speak to? We spoke to Wise Men Say podcast. Here's their thoughts ahead of the game.
Hello guys, I'm Jack, coming courtesy of the Wise Men Say podcast, which is the longest running Sunderland AFC podcast. We've been running a full 10 years since 2013 with three shows a week. And I'm speaking on this podcast today as the guys from No Nay Never have asked me to give my thoughts on Sunderland's season so far and how I see, obviously, the fixture on Friday night going. As for the season overall, I think we've done well, especially for what we've got. I think the goal always coming up is probably just to stay up. It's a hard division. And when you look at the other two teams who've come up with us, obviously Wigan have suffered the points deduction but weren't looking good anyway. Rotherham are in the relegation scrap. So we've done the best out of the promoted clubs despite being the lowest finishing one. So yeah, we've came up, we've done well. We've been totally stagnated with injuries. We've had a massive striker problem the full season, to be honest with you. I do think Tony Mowbray was left slightly short with that, as Ross Stewart has had two long-term injuries. Ellis Sims obviously got recalled. And by the end of January, we were left with just Joe Gellert as our only striker, who's only scored one goal up to now and is coming under a lot of criticism from a lot of our fans. So I do feel like if we did have them, like maybe a striker for the whole season, or Ross Stewart, or if a bit more depth in positions, we could have even hit for the playoffs, as we looked close to do that at points. But overall, I do think we've still exceeded expectations. We've had a really good season overall. And hopefully this is the building blocks to push on next year and maybe getting them playoff spots. But I'm definitely happy with how we've done. We've had a good season. We've been as high as fourth as one point. And as late in the season as January, we were up to fourth. So we've done well, and maybe there could have been a chance for a serious playoff push, but that has been hindered by a lot of injuries and not enough depth in the squad, really. As for just the game tomorrow, yeah, there's been a few points during this season where I've looked at a game and thought, wow, yeah, we're in big trouble, but none so much as this one tomorrow. Not only are Burnley the best team in the league, arguably the best championship side ever, we're, as I say, stagnated with injuries. We've got Dan Ballard out, Jewson Burnett out, Elliot Embleton, Corey Evans, Ross Stewart, Adji Elise, Dennis Sergin. You know, we're up to our neck in injuries. We're really down to bare bones, to the point where Tony Mowbray said 15-year-old Chris Rigg could feature tomorrow against the champions elect. So, yeah, I can't see anything other than at least a 3-0 win for your lot. But it'd be very Sunderland of us to do something like we did at Norwich the other week. Norwich on fire. We've lost our last three. And we go and smash and grab and get a 1-0 win. So, yeah. I mean, it's always good to watch a team like Burnley. You know, they're really, really fun to watch. But, yeah, we're in big trouble tomorrow. Obviously, from the reverse fixture, you beat us there, which I'm sure was a cracking away day for the Clarets, as it came from two goals behind to beat us 4-2 in the second half. But, yeah, hopefully an entertaining game. But, I'd like to see us get something. But I can't see it at all. And I'm sure a lot of teams have said that here this season. But, yeah, I think you're going to absolutely wallop us tomorrow, if I'm honest. Cheers, guys, and all the best.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
And then referee news for you. 36-year-old Australian-born referee Jared Gillett, who is now based in Liverpool. Gillett or Gile? G-A? Who knows? He's based in Liverpool. He returns to Turf Moor to take charge of just his second ever Burnley match. The first time we saw him, it was in the middle. First time we saw him in the middle for a Burnley match was a 2-1 home win over West Brom back in January. Although we went on to win that game, his performance on the night wasn't exactly universally popular with Clarets fans. I think we all remember this. He appeared to miss a blatant push on Charlie Taylor for Albion's early opener, then also turned down a couple of penalty appeals at the other end, including what appeared to be a blatant push on Josh Brownhill. Prior to the season, he's also been the video assistant referee for 5 of Burnley's Premier League matches between 2020 and 2022, and a select one group official. The majority of his appointments are now for Premier League matches. That wasn't the greatest. That was a frustrating night against West Brom.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah. We didn't get it all our own way.
No. Yeah, great, great ending. No, would have tried to find great kick, wasn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah, yeah, it really was. It was, oh, God, yeah. God, we've had some season, haven't we? We really have. So let's get our heads into EFL news then, Rich. How are you feeling ahead of the game? We should have a full strength side. I'm not particularly concerned about any hangover from the City game. I think it's going to be just fine. I fully expect Burnley to kick off from where they left off. What do you think company's approach to the game will be? Ruthless? Take it easy? Where do we think we're going to end up?
I think you know the answer to that. I think company will never, ever take a... I think you've had to ask that question, but you know the answer. I think company's just relentless with everything he does. I think Sunderland's got quite a few injuries as well, from what I've been reading on Twitter. I think a centre-half, we were very, very close to signing. Apparently, he was in for a medical or failed a medical. Dan Ballard, who I've been impressed with.
Yeah, no, I didn't realise that.
Yeah, he's and he's done well when I've watched him, and I think he's injured. Every time I watch Sunderland, I really like watching them, actually. Obviously, we had a fantastic win, and it was up at the stadium a light when we come from two down to win 4-2. Probably up there, top two away games this season, which was, Zerui kind of really announced himself, didn't he, with that great curling effort. So I don't think they're going to sit 10 men behind the ball, but I think overall that will suit us. And obviously, we've got a lot of players coming back from international duty, so I don't know if that will have any impact at all. But I'm fully expecting us to, to get the 3 points and kind of be that one win away. Well, hopefully being able to go to Middlesbrough on the Good Friday, able to get promoted. Team-wise, obviously, we've got players back, which is great. I think Benton, Howard, Bellis will be in the squad. Maybe Churlin off. I know he's done well for Macedonia. I think Jay's still out, which is a bit of a blow. Interesting how he goes in. I think Browner will be back too. I'm not 100% sure.
Yeah, that was gonna be my next question. I've not seen anything.
So I'm not seeing anything necessarily either way. And it's interesting if Browner is back, because he's been playing Gunmanson in kind of centre mid, hasn't he?
Yeah.
Whether he goes back to kind of like Browner playing there. I think if he's fit, Browner will start.
Yeah, I
don't think Benson will start. I think he'll an impact sub off the bench. I know Ekdal picked up a bit of a knock with Sweden, had to go off at half time. So, again, does he play? Does Howard Bellis play? So, I think a couple of little selection dilemmas, but they're all really, really good selection dilemmas, aren't they? They're all very, very good players. And I think we'll look at our starting 11 and our bench on Saturday, on Friday. So, I'm going to go, bloody hell, that is a strong team.
It really, really is. What are you thinking up front? Just standard.
Yeah, I think Barnes just crack Barnes on. Yeah, I think obviously Barnes has been a great turnaround this season. I still think, again, you're talking at players next year. Would I renew Barnes? No, I wouldn't. I don't think he's good enough for the Premier League consistently. And I know people will be saying, well, he needs his experience. And listen, if he gets a 1 year deal, I won't necessarily be disappointed, but I think we need to be looking at better calibre of players. I don't think Foster's quite ready yet, even though he scored a good goal against Wigan. I think he had a bit of an illness, actually. I don't think he played for South Africa the other night, but he did score two in the first African Cup of Nations qualifier. So, just Barnes up front again. He's doing a great job. And actually, one thing I will say about Barnes is I think he's helped Teller playing in behind. I think he's created a lot of that space. And I think, like you said, then, from Barnes not playing and from Teller playing out wide, kind of from Barnes and now going up top and Teller going number 10, I think that's really created another dimension for us and another outlet. And not a long ball outlet, but an opportunity for us to go a little bit more direct if needed as well. So, yeah, Barnes up front. And, I'd still like to see Teller in behind.
Lovely. Give me a score prediction then, please.
2-3-0, I think. I think it'll be quite comfortable. If Sunderland might score, I'm going to go because they've got some good attacking players, even though Ross Stewart's injured. Do you know what his nickname is, Natalie? Ross Stewart. No. He's a very good the Loch Ness Drogba. So I think that's a great nickname.
That's the best nickname in the whole
He's obviously
of
from
football.
Like the Scottish Highlands. I think he comes from around Ross County. Maybe. Sorry if I'm wrong, if any Sunderland fans are listening, but he's injured, which is a shame. But I think they've got an attacking threat. So if I'm going to nail down one, I'm going to go 3-1 Burnley.
I'm going to say 3-0 Burnley. I just we're just not, obviously, until we face City, we don't concede a lot of goals, and I think having a full strength defence and Mirich back in goal as well, I don't see that immediately changing. So I'm going to say 3-0. Do let us know your score predictions, listeners. You know the drill by now. You can tweet us at None and Ever. You can leave a comment on our Facebook page, or you can drop us an email at previewshow@noneandever.net. I'm going to leave you this week with Dave Statman Roberts' miscellaneous stat of the week, which he has left us to read out. He hasn't pre-recorded this one for us. He has left it with us. And it starts with a quote saying, "Empty seats, my lord." Let's see where he's going with this. Instead of a stat of the week, we're going to reflect on the news that Burnley were only allocated 2,000 tickets for the rearranged match to Ewood Park towards the end of April. Although this is within the rules, apparently 2,000 is the minimum ticket allocation in the EFL for a ground that holds more than 20,000, it still seems like an extremely petty decision by the home club, and one that has not gone down well with Burnley fans, or indeed the Burnley chairman, I would add. And I think we've all seen Alan Pearce's fantastic statement on that score. The ballot for tickets has now taken place, so well done to anybody who was successful, and commiserations to anyone who missed out, including those that weren't even able to get into the ballot. We do have a proper quiz question later, but without wanting to fan the flames in the aftermath of this ticketing debacle, we want you to predict how many empty seats there will be at Ewood Park on the 25th of April. The ground supposedly holds 31,367, so you would need to subtract what you think is going to be the actual attendance for the forthcoming match to derive your prediction of the number of empty seats. Do let us know what you think it will be.
Empty seats, Mark, empty seats.
Okay, second half of the show, we're going to head over to the FPL studio, where resident FPL expert Adam Dennett has given us an update on game week 20 something or other to let us know how things are shaping up at the top of the Known and Never FPL.
Hi, Adam here with your No Name Never FPL update from blank game week 28 and a look ahead to double game week 29. Starting with your game week 28 team of the week, there are only 7 fixtures this week, so limited players to choose from, and a lower scoring week than normal, 118 points this would have got you. Starting with 2 Villa players, Martinez in goal with a save and clean sheet points, and Mings at the back. With a clean sheet, assist and 3 bonus points in Aston Villa's 3-0 victory at home to Bournemouth. Then Christensen from Leeds with a goal and 1 bonus point in their 4-2 victory, crucial victory away at Wolves, wide open at the bottom still. And completing your back three, Spurs' new signing Pedro Porro with a goal in his side's 3-3 draw against Southampton. As you can see, plenty of goals this game week. Moving into midfield, your top scorer from the week and popular captain, Saka from Arsenal, with 2 goals, an assist and 3 bonus points, banging him 18 points this week in Arsenal's 4-1 demolition of Palace, who don't currently have a senior goalkeeper. Don't know if that's any different after the international break, but could be a team to target. Moving on, there's Abdoulaye Doucouré from Everton with a goal, assist and 3 bonus points in their 2-2 draw away at Chelsea. Another former Everton player, Theo Walcott, with a rare goal, assist and bonus point in Southampton's 3-0 draw against Spurs. Another Villa player, Douglas Luiz, with a goal and 3 bonus points. And completing the midfield, Brentford midfielder Jensen with a goal and 3 bonus points in their 1-1 draw at home to Leicester City. Up front, Isak from Newcastle with 2 goals and 3 bonus points. A very late penalty winner for Newcastle away at Forest. And Che Adams with a goal and 3 bonus points in that 6-goal thriller between Southampton and Spurs. Now onto your No Name Never overall rankings, and there has been some changes at the top. Back into the top 5 is Rupert Boo, who were a long time leader earlier in the season with 1,838 points. I'm in 4th place, my vintage Claret side with 1,845 points. third, down a couple of places, former leader Alex Maxwell with 1,846 points. Just 1 point ahead is Alice Flanagan with 1,847 points. A new leader, and as we'll find out in a moment, had a very good month. Joe Bailiff with ABCDEFC, 14 points clear at the top at the moment with 1,861 points. And as I've mentioned, the March Manager of the Month award is now, I'm ready to reveal it, as we've had the international break, so only three game weeks this month. In fifth place, Joe Bailiff, our overall leader, in joint fifth for the month with 228 points with Paul Haycock. In fourth is another one of my mates from Todman and Paul Senior with 230 points. Third, Sean Retty, who's been on talking all things FPL last season, Retford Rovers, 232 points. Second place, Simon Finch with 236 points. And another guest we've had on the pod getting the victory this month. I don't think he's actually a Burnley fan, so I don't know if that still makes him eligible for the No Name Ever sticker, but he's won one anyway. It's Jason McKenna from Premier Injuries. His MVP FC side, 10 points clear with 246. Well done, Jason. I think we'll get in touch with you and get that sticker sent out. Just looking ahead to double game week 29, there's 12 teams that have a double game week this week in what is guaranteed to be the biggest game week of the season. So transfers, captaincy and chip strategy are all vital going into this week. I'm going to ask producer Matt to upload the confirmed and projected fixtures for the rest of the season to help your planning. But there's so many options this week. It could go so many ways. So good luck to everyone. The deadline is this Saturday, April 1st. Don't be a fool and miss it at 11 a.m. Wishing you all green arrows for double game week 29. Up the Clarets.
Hey Rich, finally, Dave's left us with a question to finish off this week's previous show, so listen up, let's see if you know what this is. Although no Burnley player has scored a hat-trick against this week's opposition in a second-tier match at Turf Moor, two Burnley players have achieved that feat in top-flight matches against Sunderland. Can you name any of them?
Andre Gray is one.
Ooh, and?
Will it be my era?
God knows. God knows. Who knows? Let's see. Well, me and Rich think Andre Gray might be one of them.
Another top flight in my time. So, I don't know, Leighton James.
Oh, that's a good shout. I'm going to say Andy Payton. I have no idea.
Top flight? He wants to play in the top flight for us, Andy Payton.
Top flight doesn't necessarily mean Premier League.
Means Division One, doesn't it? So it means either Division One or Premier League.
Were we not in the Division One at any point when Payton was? Because he was with us for years.
Yeah, but that would have been classed as the Championship. Top flight.
I think he means top either the old First Division or.
Yeah, but Andy Payton did play.
He
for
never
us
played
in
the First Division. Right. Okay. Then let's say. Don't know Leighton James.
No, it's way before.
I could have sworn that we were in the top flight at some point when Andy Payton was there.
Andy Payton only signed in the late 90s and left in the early 2000s.
That's true. Yeah, for so we would have missed it. Think he was earlier. Yeah, missed it by probably a good 7 or 8 years.
About maybe 20 years, Natalie.
No, not that.
Well, we didn't. When did we get relegated from the top flight? We got promoted in 2009, and that was the first time in 36 years.
Oh, yeah, that's true, actually.
I know you've been a bit ill, Natalie, so I'll let you off with your maths.
Yeah, my brain's not working. I'm just like, no, surely we were like in the top flight in like 93, 94, something like that, weren't we?
No, it was in like Division 4 then, probably.
Oh, good Lord. Do you know what? Let's end this chaos right now.
And
I will go and brush up my historic timeline of Burnley's attendance in the top flight. That is all we've got time for, listeners. Thank you so much for spending the previous show with us. We have a lot to look forward to in the last nine games of the season, and hopefully, I think if we get to around the Reading game, by the time we're playing Reading and Rotherham, we're going to be promoted and champions. So fingers crossed. We will be back next week looking at what happened at that Sunderland game and previewing what's next for the Mighty Clarets. This has been the preview show brought to you by the Known and Ever podcast. Until next time. The Known and Ever podcast is brought to you in association with the TalkSport Fan Network. Natalie Bromley is the host and editor, and the show is produced by Matt Moss. Our resident statistician is Dave Roberts, and our FPL expert is Adam Dennett. The analysis show team is collectively Tom Whittaker, Richard Steele, George Poole, Charlotte Rigby, Adam Dennett, and Robbie Kopak. Our music is provided by George Gaskill, and our newsletter team is headed up by Jamie Smith. If you don't already, you can subscribe to our newsletter by visiting nonadnever.substack.com. Our thanks as ever go to our partners TalkSport. We are, as ever, proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.